So we're looking at the Mishnah now on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. And the subject of this Mishnah is the mitzvah of Mora Melech. We have to be in awe of the king. That's a mitzvah. You know, you and I might think that that's an extra embellishment, but it's not. It's one of the mitzvahs in the Targum Mitzvahs, Mora Melech. And the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, shetehe emascha alecha, which means that we have to guarantee that the relationship that we have to a king is one of Mora. We find Mora with regard to our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mora with regard to our parents, Mora with regard to a Rebbe who teaches us Torah. Now Mora in with regard to a king. And it seems like the laws of Mora with regard to a king are even more demanding and more strict than those that apply to a Rebbe. Now, it doesn't say anywhere that a Rebbe has to take a haircut on a regular basis so that he looks spiffy. Or that you can't even watch a melech while he's taking a haircut, because that too in some way detracts from that awe that you have to have for a melech. So that's the subject of this Mishnah. We've been learning for a while now about the laws that apply to a melech. However, the radical change here in this Mishnah, as opposed to the previous Mishnah, the previous two Mishnayos, is that we're no longer talking about the responsibilities that are incumbent on the Melech, but rather our responsibilities vis-a-vis a Melech. And this is the awe that we have to have for the Melech. So first of all, Ein Rochvin al Suso. We're not allowed to ride on his horse. Now basically, Suso is not a specific case, which it certainly is, but it is indicative, or shall we say, representative of an entire category. And it means anything that was designated for the king's use, what you call his personal use, we're not allowed to use it. Unless it's necessary for the king. If we're doing it for the sake of helping the king, let's say I would have to ride a horse of a king in order to protect the king, that would be mutter. But other than that, I'm not allowed to use his utensils, which he used in his lifetime. The Rambam writes, this is Perek Beis Milchus Malachim, Kavod Gadol Nagid B'Melech, Umesimim lo emon v'yira b'leiv kol adam, shenemar som tasim alecha melech shetehei emoscha alecha. And the Rambam seems to assume that there are two sides to the coin. There's ema, which means do not, and there's kavod, which means do. There are negatives that we have to avoid, and there are positives, a positive kavod that we have to give to the melech. And the Rambam derives this from the pasuk Som Tasim Alecha Melech. Now it's interesting, since this mitzvah is incumbent upon us, it would seem like the king himself has no control over this mitzvah. If it was his mitzvah, the king's mitzvah, then what halacha could apply or would apply? Like for example, yeah, mechila, correct. It would be halacha mechila, that the king could look the other way and say, I waive my rights and I give it to you. No, the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech. The king doesn't have control over this mitzvah of kavod and yira. We have that mitzvah and the king can't change it at all. And the first thing that the Rambam brings down is, Ein rochvim al susa. Then, the Rambam following the seder of our Mishnah, Ein yoshvin al kiso. We cannot sit on his chair. Now, a similar halacha applies to a father. If a father or a mother have a set, you know, chair where they sit, today it's a little bit less relevant, but back in the day, there used to be a designated seat for a father and a mother. Today we have it too, but back in the day, there was even a designated place for the father would stand, because he used to get together with his colleagues, and he would stand in a certain place that was designated for him. And a child is not allowed to usurp that. But there is halacha mechila. the father demands kavod, and he could waive his rights to kavod. Waive, W-A-I-V-E. But in the case of the melech, there is no mechila. Is melech shemochal kvodo ein kvodo mochal. Not only that, the Meiri points out on this Mishnah that the halacha that you're not allowed to use the utensils of a king applies even after the king's death. And therefore what they did was, after the king died, number one, they gave the replacement king, who was appointed as a king, they gave him rights to choose what utensils he would want to use, because from one melech to another, it's okay. But whatever utensils the replacement melech doesn't want to use, they would burn it publicly to make sure, to guarantee that no one would have access and use those kelim. The Rambam points out, in Yoshvin al Kiso, the Rambam says, V'chein lo yishtamish ba'avodov u'bishifchosav. So the maidservants that were designated to serve the king were not allowed to be used by anyone but the replacement king. Anyone else, the ordinary rank and file citizen, was not allowed to get benefit or service from the maidservant or from any other attendants. And the Mishnah goes on and says, "Vein mishtamshin bisharvito." Right? We know the word sharvit from Megillas Esther. That's a very famous word. The scepter, it's called in English. How do you pronounce it? Scepter. Okay. V'ein roim oso kishu mistaper. Now, as we'll see later on, that the king has to take haircuts quite frequently to make sure that he's pretty spiffy. But not only that, we're not allowed to watch him while he's taking a haircut. Some interpret that the act of taking a haircut itself is a little bit degrading and detracts from our awe of the king. Others say that while he's taking a haircut, part of his hair is cut and part of his hair is not cut, and therefore it looks a little bit weird. And not only that, you can't observe the king, you can't watch the king, lokshu arum, if he's naked, velokshu bebeis hamerchatz, because when he's in the beis hamerchatz, he starts taking off his clothes. See, even before he takes off all his clothes, you're not allowed to look at him, the chiddush of the Mishnah, because yes, part of his clothes are on and part of his clothes are off. That also is degrading. And this is all based on a pasuk, shenemar, som tasim alecha melech. So here, Michael, if you don't mind reading the whole pasuk to us, it's in Sefer Dvarim again, Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Tezvav.
Tom tasim alecha melech, asher yivcha Hashem elokecha bo, bekerev achecha, tasim alecha melech, lo tuchal latet alecha ish nochri, ashelo achicha hu.
Okay. So there are many parts of that pasuk which are not relevant directly to us about the qualifications of a king, who could serve as a king, who could be appointed as a king. And it could be that in order to appoint a king, we need all sorts of conditions to be fulfilled. We may need the Sanhedrin, possibly in one situation we may even need a Navi. But the Torah says, Shenemar Som Tosim Alecha Melech, Shetehei Moscha Alecha, that you have to have fear and awe of the king. Now the Gemara wants to know, what about the case of Avishag? So let's say a few words about Avishag. Avishag was the Shunamis. The Tanakh records in Sefer Melachim that Melech David became very cold. His body couldn't get warmed up by clothing.
It's our Avayechi, no?
Is it? Yeah, you could double check that. And Chazal say that was maybe a punishment because he cut off the knaf, you know, the corner of Shaul HaMelech's Beged. So David HaMelech is in this situation where he's absolutely freezing. And they look for a woman, a Besula. Now this is, again, this I can't explain to you biologically, but Rashi says in Sefer Melachim that a Besula has a certain warmth to her body that a Be'ula, a woman who's already had relations, doesn't have. Again, I can't explain that to you. And so they looked for a besula who would come and be with David HaMelech in his bed and warm him up so that he could survive the cold. Now the question of our sugya is, what status does Avishag have? Is she a servant, you know, a maid servant, because she's serving him in order to warm his body? Or did they have a marriage relationship? So the Gemara says, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Avishag muteres l'Shlomo. Now, Shlomo is the son of David. He obviously can't marry his father's wife. And if Rabbi Yochanan says that Shlomo is allowed to marry Avishag, then it must be that his father was not married to her. But yet, Asura l'Adoniyah. Adoniyah, if you recall, was also a son of David HaMelech from a different mother. I think we said it was Chagit, if I remember correctly. And Adoniyah is not allowed to have any relationship whatsoever with Avishag. What's the difference between Shlomo, one son from Bathsheba in that case, and another son, Adoniyah? The answer is that Shlomo is Melech Hoya. Umelech Mishtamesh Bisharvito Shel Melech. The replacement king is permitted to use the objects of the previous king. And that's why he could, Shlomo Melech could use the Sharvit, and also in this case he could use the maidservant, the Shifcha of David HaMelech, because he's the king replacing a king. However, Asur l'Adoniyah, because Adoniyah was not a king. Adoniyah was a son of David who tried to usurp the kingship, the throne. And he came to Shlomo HaMelech, as recorded in Sefer Melachim, and he wanted to get married to Avishag. And as a result of that request, Shlomo HaMelech put him to death. That comes under the halacha of Moreid B'Malchus. Someone who wants to usurp the kingship, he's a rebellious person, rebelling against the king. So in this request, implicit in this request of Adoniyah to marry Avishag, he was declaring himself a king. And in fact, he was not a king. Asul Adoniyah de Hejo tu. Hejo means a rank and file citizen. And the entire assumption here again of Rabbi Yochanan is that David HaMelech never married Avishag. If he had done so, then Shlomo HaMelech would not be allowed to marry Avishag, which he did, because it was the wife of his father. That's called Eshes Aviv. So the Gemara now goes on a study, an investigation. Is it true that David HaMelech did not marry Avishag? And really what underlies this Gemara is that the Gemara is very uncomfortable with the fact that Avishag comes to sleep in David HaMelech's bed. She's an unwed woman, and if David HaMelech never married her, we had the entire sugya yesterday of Yichud Pnuya, that a man is not allowed to be alone in a private place with an unmarried woman. How then was David HaMelech permitted to be alone with Avishag?
That was a derabanan, not the doraita.
Correct, but it was a gzeira of Bezdin Shel David. So it would be very odd if David HaMelech instituted this gzeira and then he himself violated the gzeira. Therefore, it would be more logical to assume that David HaMelech married Avishag. So the Gemara says, Avishag maihi. What was the exact Yachas, the relationship between Avishag and David? Dichsiv v'amelech David zaken bo bayomim. When David was older on in years, and he was very cold, the pasuk records. V'yomu lo avadav yivakshu nara besula. Let's find a nara besula to warm him up. Uksiv v'yivakshu nara yotha ma'od. They found Avishag. She was a very beautiful besula. And uksiv v'nara yofad mi'od v'tehi l'melech sochenet v'teshartehu. And she served to warm up the king. Sochenet means that she is an attendant to the king. And that means that the relationship was one of a shivcha, a woman who attends to the king, providing in this case warmth for him, but she never married him. So the Gemara says, what exactly was going on here? Did Avishag agree to serve in this role and yet not marry the king? Amra. So Chazal tell us, this is only Torah Shebal Peh, this is not in the Psukim themselves, Nitzaban, right? Nesuve means to marry. Let's get married. Amar La, Asiras Li. I'm not allowed to marry you because David HaMelech had already married his maximum number of wives. How much is that? 18. She would have been number 19. And the Torah prohibits him, Lo Yarba Lo Noshim, to take an 18th wife, Amar La. And she said to him, she was very cynical about it. Again, we'll see in the Mefarshim, it's a little bit chutzpahdik the way she responded to him. And she says to him, Chasrei Laganva Nafshe. What happens if a professional ganav doesn't find any victims from whom he could steal? Either the potential victims don't have any possessions that are of value, it's not worth it for him, or maybe they're well secured and therefore he can't break into their house. So he's not willing to admit that he doesn't have the wherewithal to steal. So what does he say? L'shlamanakit. He professes to be an ish shalom, a man of peace, so to speak. You know, he gives this pretense, this excuse that he's doing tshuva. You know, he's now become an upright citizen and he doesn't want to steal. So this is an idiomatic phrase, which Avishag says that sometimes people give excuses, they're too embarrassed to admit the truth. And the implication is that you, David HaMelech, are so old that you are not capable of having intimate relations, and that's why you're not marrying me. But in truth, when you say that you're not marrying me because you're not allowed to marry me, that's just a cover-up story. So the Ben Yehoyada is very nervous about this Gemara. He says, how could she speak in such a chutzpahdik way? So he gives a whole reinterpretation of what was going on in this interchange, based on symbolic meaning. But we're going to take the Gemara literally. Amar Lahu, now David HaMelech, I guess, is a little bit put aback by this statement, and he really wants to prove that he's capable of having intimate relations, but he refuses to marry her because halachically he's enjoined from marrying her. The Gemara is going to ask later, well, why can't he divorce one of his wives and marry her? So he says to his servants, he says, Kiru li lebasheva, call my wife Batsheva, and she will testify to the fact that I'm capable of having intimate relations. And the next piece of Gemara, I'm going to have to sort of bow out a little bit because I'm not exactly sure what's going on over here. Uksiv, the Pasuk tells us, and again, we're back to Sefer Melachim. Vatovo Batsheva el Hamelech Hachadora. So Batsheva comes to the king in his private chambers, and what does this imply? It implies they had relations. Now David had a relationship, an intimate relationship with his wife Batsheva, and again he's trying to prove that to Avishag that he's capable. And what happened? Now, the Pasuk itself reads the following. It says, Vatovo Batsheva el Hamelech, Hachadora, Vamelech Zoken Miod, Vavishag Ashunamis Mishoris es Hamelech. So Rav, the Amora Rav, counts up the words in this Pasuk. And there are 13 words in this Pasuk. What's the significance of the number 13? Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Biosa Shah, Kincha Batsheva, Bishlosh Esrei Mapos. Now the word kinuach is what is called an external inspection. There are two types of bedikas that a woman could make. There's a bedika where she inserts a cloth inside the private parts. That's called Chorin Ustokim, and then there's something called Kinuach, which is an external wiping. And she wiped herself 13 times after each relationship of intimacy that they had. And that's indicated or hinted by the number 13 words in this Pasuk. truth is that there are 14 words in this pasuk.
Unless you call Bathsheba.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what the Ben Yehoyada says over here, that the, and the Marsha also points us out, that the, that Bathsheba, even though it's separated as two words, but it's really one word. So that's how they get the number 13. So David HaMelech demonstrated that he had 13 relations with her at Beosa Shah. Again, a pretty impressive feat. And she wiped herself 13 times, and it seems that these external, as we said, wipings proved that he had all these relations with her, that the cloth that she used was saturated with his sperm. Now the Gemara wants to know, Rav Shemen Bar Abba, is that what you have, Rav Shemen? It's a little bit too small for me.
Yeah.
So Rav Shemen Bar Abba points out that Luchora, if there was a pressing reason, again in this case to avoid the violation of Isur Yichud, for David to marry Avishag, and yet he's enjoined from doing so because he already had 13 wives, then why couldn't he just divorce one wife, and he would be down to 17, then he could marry Avishag? And the answer is that the halacha is absolutely opposed to divorce. Now this, my friends, is a sugya in Masechta Yevamos and a Masechta Kiddushin, a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Rabbi Akiva. And Beit Shammai says that you're not allowed to just marry divorce your wife. Only the introduction in Parashas Ki Teitzei to divorce is Ki Matza Ba Ervas Dovar. That if he suspects her of adultery, then he's allowed to divorce her. But in the absence of that, he's not allowed to divorce her. And we're going to soon see how severe of a violation it is, and the repercussions of divorcing a woman when you're not justified in doing so. Rabbi Akiva says, "Afilu hikdiach es tavshilo," even if she spoils his supper, I guess out of anger, that's again a reason, grounds for divorce. But our sugya seems to reflect the sheet of Beit Shammai. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Can we say that Avishag, in a sense, was not serving as a wife or even a woman, but more like just a keli or a
utensil? Correct.
She was just, I think, a blanket, basically. She was
correct.
A job, as opposed
excellent.
To
excellent. And that's what the Rambam says, that lo yishtamesh b'shvachosav. Except, the Rambam says, the only exception is the melech acher, a replacement king. Shlomo Melech could marry Avishag because he's a replacement king. And he's not marrying his father's wife because Avishag was never married to David, but rather his wife, his father's shivcha, the king's shivcha. Lefichach, says the Rambam, Avishag Haisa muteres l'shlomo v'asura le'adonia.
So we're saying then, presumably, that every time that Avishag came to David HaMelech, there was somebody else in the room.
No, we're not saying that. There was no one else in the room. And the question is, how is he allowed to do so?
Well, the Gemara hasn't just dealt with that yet.
And the Gemara says that the only reason he did so was because he was so cold that he couldn't, now again, I'm not saying that everyone's going to agree to what I'm saying, but one school of thought says that his situation was very extreme. Now, I'm not saying that you could violate the Isur Yichud for the sake of a chole, but there are two extreme categories with a gray area in the middle. And the gray area in the middle is very complicated. One is called a chole she'ein bo sakana, and there's another area called a chole sheyesh bo sakana. In between, there's something called a chole sheyavol yachol lavo lidei sakana. And the halacha is very complicated. For example, on Yom Kippur, again, I don't want to get too far off, because even though we started early, we still have a lot to do, believe it or not. On Yom Kippur, are you allowed to eat if the possibility exists that if you don't eat, even though now you're healthy, but you'll come into a sakana situation? So just to give you the tip of the iceberg of a very complicated question here, was David HaMelech allowed to be alone with Avishai in order to warm him up, and she was a psula pnuya the answer probably lies in that middle category, where right now David HaMelech is not, his life is not in danger, but if the situation continues, if it persists, it might come to a dangerous situation. So in this case, the final decision was, yes, he's allowed to violate this Iser of Yichud. So the Gemara asks, this is Rav Shammai Bar Abba, he says, why violate an Iser if he's allowed to divorce one of his wives? Who wants to get into the whole issue of being doche an Iser of Yichud, which really looks bad in the eyes of the spectators? Why get into that whole thing? Just simply divorce his wife. So the Gemara says, Bo re'e, we prove from this, kamakoshin gerushin, how objectionable it is in the halacha to divorce a woman when you have no justification vis-a-vis that woman to do so. Sherei David HaMelech hitiru lo liyached, they gave him a psak that he's allowed to violate the law of Yichud. Again, this touches on the question of Hutra versus Dechuya, but the Gemara is assuming what's called Dechuya, which means there is a violation, just that for the greater health of David HaMelech, we have to look the other way. Why couldn't they just simply encourage him to divorce his wife? And had he divorced his wife, he would be allowed to marry Avishag. That would be simply the best way of doing it. So at this point, the Gemara goes into a little bit of a digression about how terrible it is for a man to divorce his wife when there's no justification for doing so. She didn't violate the law. On Rabbi Eliezer, kolamagarish es ishto rishona, if a man divorces his first wife, afilu mizbeach morid olav dmos. And the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk here in Tanakh, in Sefer Malachi, to prove that the Mizbeach itself sheds tears because of the divorce situation. How do we know this? Again, the Gemara is going to take a whole slew of words in the Psukim in Sefer Malachi and put them all together and get the general picture. So the first part of the pasuk says, Vizos Shenis Tasu, Kasos dima es misbach Hashem bechi. In other words, the tears cover over the altar of Hashem. There's weeping, there's sighing, and the pasuk seems to ascribe to the mizbeach human qualities, that the mizbeach itself is in anguish. And then the pasuk, so that doesn't tell us anything about divorcing a woman, but in the next part of the pasuk it says, May ein od pnos el hamincha v'lakaches ritzon miyedchem, that Hashem doesn't want to take our karbonis anymore. He doesn't receive them with ratzon, with will, with excitement. Uksiv amartem alma. And if you're going to ask why is this Mizbeach crying and why is Hashem saying I don't want to take your offerings, and the next pasuk, the next part of the pasuk says, Al ki Hashem heid beincha uvein eshes ne'urecha, that Hashem testifies to the fact that there's some sort of a violation undermining the relationship between you and the wife of your youth. Asher ato bagadeta ba, and you have rebelled against her, v'hi chavertcha v'eshes brisecha, that she is your best friend, and she's the wife of your covenant, of your bris. And the Gemara understands that here the Navi is giving Musar to those who violated this Isur of Beincha u'Bein Eshes Nurecha Tabagadeta Ba. And what did you do? What was the nature of your rebellion or your treacherous act against your Eshes Nurecha, the wife of your youth? You violated a covenant. What is that covenant? Nisun. Nisun is called a bris. And this, by the way, this analogy between marriage and a bris is throughout all of Jewish literature. And that's why Har Sinai which is the bris between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is considered a marriage relationship. In fact, the Kesef Kiddushin is the Luchos HaBris. Just that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Shliach Lo'olacha, and he only gave the Luchos HaBris... He's a Shliach Lo'olacha, and therefore the bris would only be clinched when Klal Yisrael would receive, because the Shliach Olach is really just like a messenger to bring the object to the person who enters into the bris. And when Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos, he never fulfilled the Shlichus, and therefore the bris was never signed and sealed, it was never clinched. And basically the concept of a marriage is a concept of a bris. And by divorcing his wife, he breaks that covenant. And therefore the Mizbeach is Morid Olav Dmos. Now here in the footnote, he sends you to a sefer called Mari Kra. I don't have access to the Mari Kra, but he gives an explanation as to why it is that the Mizbeach, the altar, is Morid Olav Dmos. So unfortunately, I don't have access to this, and I don't own the Masifta on Masechta Sanhedrin, which I'm plotting to get. Yechiel Prince, who usually comes, would get it for me, but he hasn't been around the last 2 weeks. So I don't have access to that. I can just suggest the following. That marriage is a little bit like a mizbeach. Again, I'm just suggesting this, and you'll decide if you have a better pshat than mine. The Mizbeach represents sacrifice. And that's what marriage is all about, especially from the perspective of a woman who has to bear children, has to raise the children. To some extent, she gives up her own life for the sake of the marriage relationship. And it's not coincidental that if the husband is treacherous against his wife and breaks that covenant by divorcing her when there's no justified reason for doing so, then the Mizbeach is Morid Dmos. Because the Mizbeach represents that concept of Mesiris Nefesh, when a person sacrifices themselves for the sake of someone else.
Is there any significance if the Gemara talks about Menachot and not Korbanot?
I'm sure there's some significance, but I can't tell you what it is. Omar Rabbi Yochanan v'Teim Rabbi Elazar. At this point, the Gemara goes into a whole discussion about how a wife is so significant for her husband, what she does, what she provides for her husband. Ein ishto shalada mesa elim kein mevakshim imenu mamon. Her death is a terrible punishment for the husband. And the reason for that is the husband is holding on to money that belongs to someone else, and he doesn't repay that money. He's a gazlan who's not makayim the mitzvah of Eishev Zagzela. Perhaps v'ein lo, maybe he doesn't have the money to pay back, but lamaisa, he stole that money. And a punishment to the husband, in this case, for his avera, is that his wife dies. And the Gemara is going to say later on that when a wife dies, the one who suffers the most is the husband. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, and this is a Pasuk in Mishle, V'im ein lecha l'shalem, if you don't have the money to pay back the stolen money, then lama yikach mishkavecha mitachtecha. That divine providence will see that your bed is taken from underneath you. And that's an allusion, a hint to his wife. So a wife is taken away as punishment for her husband's sins. Now again, you have to ask the question, well, what was she guilty? You know, was bin sie schuldig? Why is she guilty that she should die? This is a general question when a person suffers because of the loss of someone else for his own crimes. But the answer is that there's some sort of divine system in which she apparently had also issues and she died. But this is a punishment for the husband. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan kol Adam shemesa ishta rishona. If a man loses his first wife, ki ilu charev beis hamigdash biyama. It's interesting that whenever Chazal wanted to describe in a very dramatic way a tragedy, they describe it as if a person witnessed the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in front of his eyes. Like, for example, my Rebbe, Zechanah Levracha, had to eat on Yom Kippur because he wasn't healthy in his last years. So he said, I can't eat on Yom Kippur. Of course, for me to eat on Yom Kippur would be like seeing the Churban HaBayis in front of my eyes. It's a phrase that the Chachmei Yisrael use to describe in very dramatic, extreme terms, tragedy in a person's life. And the tragedy here that's being described by Yechezkel, because Yechezkel received a nevuah that his wife would die, which is sort of symbolic of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, again, because of the context of the marriage relationship between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in that context, the Pasuk says, Ben Adam hini lokech mimchas machmad einecha b'magefa. There's going to be some sort of a plague, and machmad einecha, which is the most cherished object of your eyes, that your eyes could see, is going to be taken away from you. And that's a reference to his wife. It's also a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. It has a double entendre. V'lo tispod, v'lo tivke, v'lu tovo dima'ech, v'lo, is that what it says? V'lo, right? Yeah. V'lo tovo dima'secha. And Yechezkel HaNavi was enjoined by Hashem, by the Nevuah, from mourning the loss of his Machmad Einecha. And later on we'll see that Klal Yisrael is going to ask him, why aren't you anguished and mourning the loss of your wife? And the answer would be that he castigates the Jewish people because they're doing things and eventually they're going to lose the Beis HaMikdash, is going to be taken away from them because of their sins. Uksiv, Vadaber El Ha'am Baboker, Vatomas Ishti Ba'erev. And on that very day, on that very morning, Yechezkel transmitted his nevuah to the people. And later on, a few hours later, on the same day, his wife died. Uksiv hinini mechalal es mikdashi gon uzchem machmadei nechem. And the same phrase is used elsewhere by Yechezkel, machmadei necha, to refer to the Beis HaMikdash. And he prophesied that there would be a chilul of the Beis HaMikdash when the enemies would break through and they would contaminate the Mikdash and ultimately destroy the Mikdash. And you see that the psukim are comparing Machmad Einecha with regard to the wife of Yechezkel with Machmad Einecha, the Beis HaMikdash, telling us that when a person loses his first wife, it's as if he witnessed the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in front of his eyes. It's interesting that the Pasuk speaks about the lotispeid, the lotivke. You know, the emphasis here is on hespeid and bechi. You'll see, for example, when Avram Avinu, correct, he loses Sarah, it says Vayovo lispod l'sarah v'livkosa. There were two dimensions. There's hespeid and bechi. My Rebbe used to always say that hespeid requires total shikul adas. You know, the person has to be actually not passionate, but sort of intellectual, so that he can evaluate a person's life. In this case, the wife is his wife. And then, after hespeid, then he reaches the state of bechi, which is totally, totally emotional and irrational. And so too, when we lose the Beis HaMikdash, there are two, in a sense, two sections or two categories of avelus. One is total bechi, and that takes us through kinnis, because kinnis is meant to bring out bechi. And then we get into a state of hespeid, in which case we use our intellectual capacities to understand and to evaluate the nature of the laws.
That's the other way around.
In other words, kiddus is bechi, and then we go into a state of hespeid. Bechi and hespeid, it's the other way around.
The other way around. Yeah.
That's because we've had already 3 weeks to build up to bechi. Om Rav Alexandria, again, the impact of the loss of one's wife, kol adam shemesa ishto biyomov olam chashach ba'ado. His life becomes dark. In other words, she's the light of his life. Or Choshach be Aholo. Aholo, which is literally a tent, is a reference to the house, to the intimacy between a husband and a wife. And Nero Olov Yidach, the or, the light of the Ner, of the candle that a wife brings to a house, is extinguished and it's darkened. And Yidach means when it gradually goes out. So this candle goes out. I'm not going to quote Shakespeare, out, out, brief candle.
You just quoted him.
No, okay. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Omar, Psiosov Miskatros. His steps become shortened. In other words, his energy is weakened. He no longer walks the way he used to walk. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, again, quoting Mishle, if I'm not mistaken, there's a Pasuk in Mishle, you'll tell me if I got that right. Yetzro Tsaade Ono. Ono is a person's strength. And Tsaade means his steps. So he needs the own, the energy to take those steps. But Yetzro means that they were shortened. He's out of breath. He can't walk the way he used to walk. Rabbi Avo Omar, oh, this is beautiful. Atsoso Nofelis. She, his wife, gave him the guidance, the advice that he needed in life. And now it's fallen away. Shenemar Vatashlicheu Atsoso, and his Eitza, his source of advice and encouragement and guidance, has been taken away from him. He's totally lost. She would be in charge of everything, of the household. You know that famous card that says, I am the boss in this family and my wife gives me permission to say so. Omar Rabba Bar Chana Omar Rab Yochanan. Koshe Lizavgom Kikriyas Yamsuf. Now this is a very famous statement and people quote it all the time, but I think we'll see in a minute that it's very often misquoted. Chazal are comparing the zivu, getting together a man and a woman. A man and a woman are very different one from the other. And it's like Kriyas Yamsuf. It's like changing nature to try to get them together. You know, my claim is that every child, almost without exception, asks himself or herself, how did my father and mother get together? Like, they're so different. Try to convince a child and explain why his mother married his father. So that's Kriyas Yamsuf. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, again, there's a Pasuk here in Tehillim at this point, Elokim Moshev Yechidim Baisa. Now, the Baisa here, which is a house, is always an allusion to marriage, as we saw before, the word Ohel. And God gathers, He gathers Yechidim. Yechidim is we're going to see in the next Pasuk, is a reference to people who are incarcerated. And the reason for that derivation is because the Pasuk continues and says, Motzi Asirim Bikosharos, that he, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokim, he takes prisoners and frees them at the right moment. Kosharos, Miloshin, Kosher, Shasa Kosher means the right moment. So at this point, it seems that the Pasuk is simply referring to Hashem freeing prisoners from a house of prison where they're incarcerated, and that's what David HaMelech is praising God. But Chazal say, Al Pi Torah Shebal Peh, Al Tikri Motzi Asirim, but rather Elokim Motzi Asirim. In other words, the Ed Chaf HaDimyon, which means it's like he's being Motzi Asirim. And the Pasuk is trying to convey the message that Hashem brings people together in a bias, and it's almost like he's releasing prisoners from prison. In other words, the Hashgacha Pratis, the divine providence, intervenes in the natural course of events, and that means a miracle is taking place, in which he frees a prisoner, or in this case, he brings together a husband and a wife. And the paradigm of breaking the laws of nature in a miraculous way is the Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's not coincidental here that the Pasuk that's giving us a simile for marriage is Motzi Asirim, because Motzi Asirim is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking the people of Israel out of Mitzrayim and destroying the Mitzrayim in the Yam by splitting the Yam. And that great miracle is paradigmic of Zivugam Shel Adam, of getting together a husband and a wife. That's also breaking nature. The only difference is that in the case of Motzi Asirim, literally when Hashem releases Klal Yisrael from being prisoners to Mitzrayim, there he splits the Yaham. Here, in the case of Zivugam, he puts them together. But the answer is that just like when you split the water, you take two things that are similar and you split them, here you take two things that are dissimilar, they're actually opposite one another, and you bring them together. So it's the mirror image, the flip side. And the Gemara says, Al tikre b'kosharos, kosharos means the right moment, ela b'chi v'sherus, okay, crying and shiros, I should say. I said sherus, that's a mistake, because again, the print here is very, v'sherus. So it shouldn't say sherus, it should say shiros. What do you have? Do you have shiros?
Shiros.
Okay, so I'm going to have to solve this problem. Okay, that's my next order of challenge here. In any event, the redemption at Yam Suf entails both two opposites, Bechi and Shira. Bechi, because the Mitzrim are crying as they perish, and Shira, the Jews are being saved. So it means this Pasuk is really to be understood on two different levels. On one level, it's referring to Kriyas Yamsuf, in which case there's both Kosharos, which is a word that's made up of two parts, Bechi and Shira. And on the other level, it's on a deeper level, it's symbolic of putting together people for marriage. And the Bechi always indicates a difficult challenge, and that's the difficulty of putting together a husband and a wife. But on the other hand, there's Shira, because this is a great miracle that two opposites can get together. So, you know, there's a phrase in English, opposites attract. I mean, this is the source for it. So the Gemara says, Eini, is this really true? V'omar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Arboim Yom Kodem Yetziras Avlad, Baskol Yotzeis, V'omeres Bas Ploni Leploni. 40 days before the fetus is developed in the womb, there's already a baskol, and it's predetermined that so-and-so would marry so-and-so. So again, if it's built into nature, then why does Hashem have to break nature in a miraculous way? Lokasha habezivug rishon habezivug sheni. In other words, this halacha, that it's predetermined who you're going to marry, that only applies to a first marriage. And in that case, there's no need for Kriyas Yamsu, because it's built into nature, it's already predetermined. But in the Zivug Sheni, that all depends upon a person's zechuyos, you know, what he merits. And there, it's going to have to be a Kriyas Yamsuf kind of situation. That's why I say that this Gemara of Kashik Zivugam Shalom Kriyas Yamsuf is misquoted very often. The Gemara says it only applies to Zivug Sheni, not to Zivug Rishon. You know, the classical drasha that you give at a Sheva Brachas of a young man that marries a young woman is Kriyas Yamsuf, but that's only really Zivug Sheni. By the way, you know, there's a famous Gemara in Moed Katan that asks the following question. If a baskel goes out, so why, you know, why did Chazal tell us, you know, if you have the opportunity to marry a girl, don't delay it? Even on Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to marry a woman. Shevi Yekad Menu Acher, because otherwise another guy is going to marry this woman. Well, wait a minute, it was decreed already 40 days before Yetzias Avlad. So the Gemara answers that tefillah, that the power of prayer is so intense and so immense that it could even break a gzera. So if this other fellow through his tefillah, is zocheh to marry this woman, even though originally it was predestined that you would marry her, you better be careful about that. And therefore, even in a time of avelus, what's called erusin, you're allowed to get engaged to this girl. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, lakol yesh tmura, anything can be replaced. Chutz me eshes neurim, but the wife of one's youth can never be replaced. Shenemar vi eshes neurim ki timois. In other words, that the pasuk indicates that if a wife of one's youth, that's called eshes neurim, the first wife, is cast off ki timois, it's a rhetorical question. You can never get to that situation where you can cast her off because you need her desperately. And even though, again, second marriages are very successful in many cases, I'm not chas v'shalom being cynical about second marriages, but it's never exactly the same. And perhaps the memories of the first marriage will linger on. That's the pella of a human being, that God created man with such a psyche, that he's able to be married to one woman and still retain those cherished memories for his first wife. I mean, how do you understand that on a psychological level? But that's the way God created man. Masni le Rabbi Yehuda.
It's different when the first marriage ends in divorce.
Yeah.
Then he may want to forget all those memories. But what I mean to say, if he loses his first wife, Rahman al-Islam, and then he marries another wife, he can have an absolute love and endearing relationship with his second wife without forgetting his first wife. I mean, when you think about that, it's a pella that how God created, you know, the human mind and heart is made of so many different chambers. Masli le Rabbi Yehuda le Rabbi Yitzchak Bre. Rabbi Yehuda taught his son Rabbi Yitzchak. Ein adam motzei karas ruach ela miishto rishona, the final contentment in a marriage is from his first wife. Shenemar, and he quotes a pasuk here in Mishlei. The previous pasuk was from Yeshaya Novi. Yehi mekarcha baruch usmach me'eshes ne'urecha. And here we turn to Daf Chaf Beis Amid Beis. Mekarcha, the word mekarcha is always a reference to marriage. Mekarcha means the source of having children, and it's a reference in this case to Eshes Nurecha, and the blessing here is such that the first wife Eshes Nurecha is so blessed that she cannot be replaced. As great as the second wife might be, she cannot replace the first wife because that special intimate relationship. Omar lo, and when Rabbi Yitzchak heard this from his father, he said to him, "Kagon man, can you give me an example of such wife?" Omar lo, kagon imcha, as my relationship with your mother is such that it brings me all this bracha. Oh boy, only in a Talmud Bavli can you find the next piece of Gemara. Ain't, is this really so? What was the relationship like between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yitzchak's mother, meaning his wife? Vaha mikri le Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yitzchak berei. There was another time that Rabbi Yehuda taught his son Rabbi Yitzchak that the pasuk in in Koheles, which we read on Sukkis, just to wisen us up a little bit, sober us up, says motzi ani mar mi moves es ha'isha asher hi mitzudim v'charamim. I find marriage with my wife, quoting this pasuk in Koheles, to be more bitter than death. Well, that's pretty harsh to say about one's wife. The Omar lo, when Rabbi Yitzchak asked him, "Give me an example of this pasuk," he says, "Kagon man," and he said to Kagon imcha, like your mother. Imagine telling your son that I find life with you, with his mother, my wife, to be worse than all the bitterness and the snares and nets. He translates it here. So we have a theory. On the one hand, he tells his son that his mother, his son's mother, meaning his wife, is a paradigm of a woman who brings bracha into the family. And on the other hand, he tells his son on a different occasion that his mother is an example of bitterness in his life. And the Gemara resolves this by saying, Miskaf Tkifa, that indeed her personality was very strong, she was very strong-willed, but Ibure Mi'abra Bimila. And the Marsha translates this as being very forgiving. Now, there's a very, very fascinating footnote here in the name of the Ben Yehoyada. If you have it on the bottom, he says the following, that when Rabbi Yehuda called his wife bitter, he was speaking of her inborn disposition, the way that she was born, her innate nature. She was a bitter person by nature. But at the same time, he found serenity by living with her because she succeeded completely, please underline that word, in overcoming and vanquishing her natural characteristics through the sheer force of her will. You see that a strong-willed woman, that could be used in two directions, for good or the opposite. She used it for good. She was able to refine her natural disposition. And as a result, the relationship between Rabbi Yehuda and his wife was very endearing. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, on the one hand, could point to his wife as an example of bitterness, because her natural disposition, innate, was bitter. But on the other hand, he could point to her as the source of all blessing, because living with her brought so much blessing into her life. So again, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm not going to tell you that this is Pashup Pshat, but it's absolutely stunning.
Sense, you know. It does make sense. You have a lot of people have to work over they're really embittered people that work over that
right.
Trait.
So here's an example. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Unya Mishmei Derav, Isha Golam Hi. A woman who's never been married before is like an unfinished vessel, which means Golam means raw materials, right? You have to break it in. The Eino Koreses Bris El Misha Asa'a Kli. That first relationship that she has is critical. That's why, you know, at the time of the Yevanim, it was a terrible gzera that it has a fancy word in Latin, which I forget now. But the gzera was that tiboil hegmat chila, that they would want to have that first relationship with a virgin woman. In any event, the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Yeshayahu Navi, ki osayich baalayich. Where is it? I'm sorry, ki baalayich osayich Hashem tzvako shmo. And all this in the nevuah of Yeshayahu of comparing a be'ila, the first relationship, to Osayah, to making a kli, is symbolic of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Klal Yisrael are married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eshes Nu'rayich, and therefore Yeshayahu HaNavi comforts the people of Israel, no matter how far they stray away, the marriage relationship is still intact, and God never gives or delivers a bill of divorce to break up that bris, because ba'alayich osayich, it's like the relationship of a woman to her first boel, with whom she consummated her marriage. And that is a bris that has a tremendous power that connects two people together. Dan, if I can trouble you just to close the door, if you don't mind. Tana, we learned in a brisa, ein ish mes el ishto v'ein isha mes el abala. The one who suffers the most anguish in Rachmana Litzlan, the death, is the husband or the wife. Ein ish mes el ishto shenemer. How do we know that when a man dies, it's his wife who suffers, the almana suffers the most anguish? Shenemer vayomas elimelech ish naami. Elimelech died. Okay, he died. There were many members of the family, children and so forth, but ish naami. In other words, he, Elimelech, was the husband of Naomi. This is not necessary to identify Elimelech. Elimelech was one of the Anshei, the Chachmei Adar. But Eshes Naomi, Ish Naomi, means that she suffered the greatest anguish in the loss of her husband Elimelech. Vein Isha Mesa Labaila Shenemar, in the case of Yaakov Avinu, when he describes his feelings in the loss of his wife Rachel, he says, "Vaniba boi bipadanran mesa olai Rachel." I was the one who suffered the death of my wife. The Mishnah tells us regarding a melech that we're not allowed to observe him when he is taking a haircut, We're not allowed to observe him when he's naked or he's in a base hamerchatz. Torah Rabbanu, we learned in a brisa, melech mistaper b'chol yom. A melech has to take a haircut on a daily basis, which is mind-boggling when you think about it, how much hair grows between one day and the other, but he's got to look absolute. Kohen Gadol, may Erev Shabbos le'Erev Shabbos, we're going to soon derive this from Psukim, that once a week the Kohen Gadol and Erev Shabbos has to take a haircut. That's in honor of the new group of Beis Av that's coming in to replace the old group. Kohen Hedjot, a regular Kohen, Echad l'shloshim yom, he has to take a haircut on a monthly basis, once a month. Melech mistap b'chol yom, shedemar melech b'yofyo, techezena einecha. This is a pasuk in Navi in Yeshaya. This pasuk, by the way, is quoted in the last perek of Yuma to allow a melech to wash his body, wash his face on Yom Kippur itself, because he has to look beautiful. And all this is part of the mitzvah of kavod and mora that we have to have for a melech. So it's critical that he maintains that beauty in the way he presents himself. This is one of the rare occasions, by the way, where the shas and the halacha relates to males, to a man in terms of beauty. There are a few cases, shol ha-melech, there are few cases. Usually beauty is left for the women. Kohen Gadol me'erev Shabbos, Lev Shabbos, Rav Shuba, Nachum, Rav Yochanan, how do we know this? Hol u'mishmaros mischadshos, that the mishmeres of Kohanim, now the new Mishmeres comes in, Erev Shabbos, because each Mishmeres would serve for a week. They divided up the year into two halves. And each Kohen, as in part of a Mishmeres, would serve twice during the year. Because the first, let's say, the first 24 weeks of the year, they would get a shot at it for a week. And then the next 24 weeks of the year, they get another shot. Again, there were Yom Tovim, had different dinim. And in honor of the arrival of the new Mishmeres that would replace the old Mishmeres, the Kohen Gadol had to take a haircut on a weekly basis, once a week, every Friday. Kohen Hedjot Echad L'Shloshim Yom D'Chsiv, because the Pasuk says, now all the laws of shaving and haircuts with regard to Kohanim are learned from Yechezkel HaNavi. This is also Haftorah, which parasha? I think parasha is Emor, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, D'Chsiv V'Rosham Lo Yigalechu U'Pera Lo Yishalechu. Okay, now Rosham Lo Yigalechu means they are not allowed to shave their heads. But on the other hand, it says that pera lo yishalechu, a pera is locks of hair. And the next part of the pasuk is the most important part of our pasuk. It says, kasom yichsimu es roshehem. It means that they have to trim the hair on their head. Okay, so how does that tell you that it's once a month? This is a pasuk that addresses the Kohanim. And the answer is, Gzeirah Shavah. V'yolef pera, pera mi nazir. In the parash of Nazir, it also uses the word pera. Ksiv hacha here, with regard to Yechezkel HaNavi. Referring to the Kohanim, it says, pera lo yishalechu. So the word pera appears in this pasuk. Uksiv hasam. In the parish of Nazir, in Parshas Noso, it says, Kadel pera si'ar rosho, malahalan shloshim, afkan shloshim. Now, a stam Nazir is 30 days. There are exceptions, but generally speaking, a Nazir is a 30-day period. And the Torah says that a Nazir is not allowed to cut his hair. And that's called pera si'ar rosho, means he's got to grow his hair. And he's only allowed to take a haircut after 30 days. So too, in the case of a Kohen, he will have to take his haircut after 30 days. He's not allowed to let his hair grow for a period of time beyond 30 days. Utnan hasam. Now, keep in mind, Rabosai, that this is not really a gzeirah shavah, because there is no such thing as a gzeirah shavah from a pasuk in Tanakh to a pasuk in Chumash. But the Gemara means to say it's like a gzeirah shavah, meaning that there are extra words in the pasuk, and they are meant to teach us something from Tanakh all the way back to the Chumash itself. Tanan Hasam Stam Nazirus Shloshim Yom. That's the Mishnah in Masechta Nazir. So the Gemara says, "V'hasam minola." How do we know that the case of a nazir requires that he take a haircut after 30 days? Omer of Masna, the Omer Kra Kodesh Yia Bigmatria Tlosin Havu. That if you take a look at the Kodesh Yia, then the gematria is 30. Now there's a whole long discussion here about how you get the gematria here. If you take the word kodesh, obviously, then you cannot come up with a gematria of 30. But if you take year and you drop the word kodesh, then you get the number 30. So the fact that Nazirus is 30 days is from the fact that he's considered holy, because the Nazir has what's called Kedushas Agavra, and that is year for a term period of 30 days. Now the Rosh points out in Masechta Nazir that this is not a full-fledged derivation, this is only what we call an asmachta, meaning they knew b'kabbalah, they already had a tradition, b'torish bal peh, that Nazirus is shloshim yom. But they used the year as a kind of a memory device to remind them of the shloshim yom. Omalei Rav Papa la'abaye, Ema lo lirvu klal. In other words, maybe we could reinterpret the pasuk in Yechezkel that says that the Kohanim are not allowed to grow their hair too long. Maybe it means they're not allowed to grow long hair at all. So what exactly is this question of the Gemara? Well, I think we'll understand it a little better as we go along. Amalei Rav Popol Abaye, Ema lo lirvu klal. Amalei Abaye responded in Iksiv. Lo yishalchu pera. If it would have said in the pasuk, lo yishalchu pera. Let's go back to the pasuk, and the pasuk says, lo yigalchu. But then it says, upera lo yishalchu. Then he says, kidika amr. Then your question would be justified. But hashta d'tziv upera. Now it says upera is pera lehevi. The extra vav is telling us that there should be a pera, there should be some growth of hair. But shluche lo l'shalche. But they're not allowed to let that pera grow for too long of a period of time. Okay, well, I see we're running out of time, so I just want to get to the next Gemara, if we can. Ihachi ha'idna nami. This is a fascinating sugya. The Gemara wants to know, why is it that Kohanim today do not cut their hair every 30 days? And the Gemara answers that there's a hekesh in the Parashat Yechezkel between the requirement of a Kohen to take a haircut every 30 days and the Iser, the prohibition that enjoins a Kohen from drinking wine. Dumya diyayin. Just like the prohibition against drinking wine applies only at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning it has to do with being machshir, the Kohen, for his service in the Mikdash. It no longer applies in our time. And that's very important for our Kiddushim here, that we're allowed to give some wine to the Kohen.
Just before they did service, before they...
So I'm saying that today there's no Iser in giving wine to a Kohen. Is my Yayin Bizman Bia, the Iser that applies to a Kohen that he's not allowed to drink wine, is only during the period of time when the temple stood and it's called Zman Bia, he could go into the Migdash, the Asur. Again, you might ask, but why is the Kohen going to go into the Migdash? I mean, it's not his Mishmeris. Shalom Bizman Bia Shari. And if he's not going into the Beis HaMikdash to serve, then he's allowed to drink wine. So it's only an Issur B'Zman Bia, which means that today we don't have Zman Bia because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Is Af Pruei Rosh. So too the Issur of growing one's hair too long that requires a Kohen to take a haircut every 30 days, Bizman Bia Asur, but Shalom Bizman Bia Mutar. Today, when we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, then it's permitted for a Kohen to grow his hair long and he doesn't have an Issur that enjoins him and forces him to take a haircut. The Yayin Shalom Bizman Bia Shari, is that really true? Your very premise that today that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, it's mutter for a Kohen to drink wine, is that so? Vatani, we learned a Braisa. Rebbe Omer, according to Rebbe Omer Ani, Rebbe says, I claim that Kohenim Asurim Lishtos Yayin Li Olam, that a Kohen continues even Bizman Hazeh to be enjoined from drinking wine. And the reason for that, we'll see, is Meheri Yibodeh Beis HaMikdash. He has to be prepared at every second to serve in the Mikdash. Aholma Ese Shetakonoso Kalkoloso. What can I do? Because the restoration of the Kohen and the allowance of the Kohen to drink wine results from his kilkul. Okay, so we're going to have to see exactly what that means. And I'm leaving this for anyone who can stay a little bit longer after we have to daven. The Omar Abaye, Kiman Shosi Kohenei Chamra Ha'idna. Then what is the heter for Kohenim to drink wine nowadays? And Abaye answers, it's Kirebi. Because Rebbe said, which means that he allowed the Kohenim to drink wine. But yet, on the other hand, he said, Kohenim Asurim Lishtos Yayin Li'olam. So we're going to have to reconcile all this. But Abai says, Kiman Shosi Kohenim Chamra Ha'idna Kirebi, that Rebbe allows Kohenim to drink wine. Says the Gemara Michlal, it would seem to imply that the Rabbanon, that the Chachamim disagreed with Rebbe, and Asrei, and they said that even though today we don't have a temple and it's not Zman Bia, nevertheless there is the Isur of drinking wine persists even today. And if that be the case, then by virtue of the Hekesh, the equation between haircutting and drinking wine, the prohibition against growing their hair should apply even Bizman Hazeh, according to the Chachamim. So the Gemara answers, Hosam Ainu Taima. Why did the Chacham disagree with Rebbe and they prohibit Kohanim from drinking wine? Bizman Hazeh Meheri Yibana Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen always has to be ready to go into the Mikdash. Even though there's no Mikdash, we hope that the Mikdash will be rebuilt and the Kohanim will immediately be able to enter in to do the Avodah. And if they're drunk, then it's going to take them hours and hours until they sober up. We can't wait that time. So we don't have a Kohen who's ready to serve, because a Shasu Yayin is not only enjoined from working, but if he works in the Mikdash, then his Avod is Psula. And the carbon that he brings is disqualified. He's going to have to replace it with a different carbon. His Hachinami, the Gemara thinks, wait a minute, Be'inon Kohen Aroy Lavod of Aleka, if you don't insist and require the Kohenim to cut their hair on a monthly basis, then they won't be fit to do the Avodah. So the same logic could apply. So the Gemara is going to say that taking a haircut doesn't take that long, but sobering up takes long. Hocha efsha lemispar v'ayil. Let them take immediately, when the moment that they hear that the Mikdash is rebuilt, they'll take a haircut and enter into the Mikdash and do the Avodah. So the Gemara says, Hosam nami efshar denayim purta. Let him take a little nap v'ayil, and the sleep will remove his state of drunkenness, and then he's kosher l'avodah. The Omar Rav Acha Rav Acha said, Derech meal, the time that it takes you to walk a meal, which is 2,000 amma, let's say it takes him 20 minutes, or Shaino, or if he takes a short dribble for 20 minutes, is mafigim esayayin. It takes away the drunkenness, and he's kosher for Kohen. So what's the big deal if we wait the 20 minutes, tell the Kohen to take a long walk, and come back, and then do the avoda? V'lav itmar Allah, Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rava Baravua, lo shanu el sheshasa kidei revius. If he only drank one revius of yayin, which might be 4.4 ounces, whatever it is, then all he needs is that break and a little shluf, and then he's kosher al yosim kidei revius. But maybe the Kohenim will drink more than a revius of yayin, and then he's going to require a longer period of time. Kol shkein de derech tardoso. Vishena Mishakrosa. So the Gemara thinks in this kasha that in such a case there's no quick way to sober up if he drank more than a revius, and therefore the Chachamim say that a Kohen is not allowed to drink wine because maybe he'll drink more than a revius of yayin, and walking around the block is not going to dissipate his state of drinkenness and sober him up. And therefore, we understand the difference, the distinction between Yayin on the one hand and haircutting on the other. In the worst case scenario, the Kohen will take a haircut, it'll take him a few seconds, a few minutes. But in the case of Shesu Yayin, if he drinks too much wine, it's going to be a whole long process until he can become kosher. And Rav Ashi says, no, there's a much more fundamental distinction between Yayin and growing one's hair. Shesuya yayin demachali avoda. In other words, the heksher coin for avoda depends upon the fact that he's absolutely sober if he drinks wine more than a revius yayin. And he went ahead and he did the avoda. The avoda is an avoda psula, gozu be rabbana. Therefore, the rabbana have to be very careful. And even nowadays, they have to prohibit the Kohen from drinking wine. But Pru'e Rosh, the lo machali avoda, Pru'e Rosh is only a separate isagavra, but has nothing to do with the heksha of the Kohen. And if his avoda is an avoda kshera, in the worst case scenario, if he has long hair and he did the avoda is qualifies. Is lo gazru be rabbanon, the rabbanon did not make a gzeir. To close the show, I want to go back to the dialogue here between Rav Papa and Abaye. Amale Rav Papa Abaye, Ema lo lirvu klal. In other words, perhaps the pasuk in Yechezkel, which says that Kohanim are not allowed to grow their hair long, and therefore every 30 days they have to take a haircut, maybe we could reinterpret. And it means they should not allow their hair to grow long at all. And therefore they don't, no growth whatsoever is permissible. And Rav Papa, in his question, is not willing to accept the Gzeirah Shava, which defines Pera based on Nazir as 30 days. Rav Papa doesn't accept the Gzeirah Shava, as we said before, because it's between a Pasuk in Tanakh and a Pasuk in Chumash. That's not a valid Gzeirah Shava. So maybe the Kohanim have to take a haircut more frequently. Amalei, Sabai responded in Iksiv Lo Yishalchu Pera. If it would have said Lo Yishalchu Pera Kidika Amrit, then your question would be correct. But Hashad Iksiv U Pera. The pasuk says U Pera is the and the U is coming to teach us Pera Lehevi. But shluchei lo l'shalchu. In other words, they're allowed to have locks of hair, but they're not allowed to allow that hair to grow too long. And therefore, they're allowed to grow hair for 30 days, but not beyond 30 days. So the vav sort of separates it as upera. Upera means lehevi, that they're allowed to have this pera. So again, let's go back to the pasuk for a minute. Verosham lo yigalechu, ufera lo yishalechu. Which means that their heads they shall not shave, and tresses they shall not grow. And this pasuk has the word pera and lo yishalechu in a sort of inverted kind of way. It should have said, urosham lo yigalechu v'lo yishalchu pera, which means they shouldn't grow their tresses. But instead, it switches it around and says upera lo yishalechu. So the word upera is out of place, and the reason for this is to tell us that they're allowed upera. They're allowed a minimum growth of hair up to but not beyond 30 days. They shall grow their pera, but they shouldn't grow it to the point in which it becomes an obvious, you know, intense hair growing. Now, the only last thing that we didn't get a chance to finish up is the Shita of Rebbe in the Braisa regarding Shesuya Yayim Bizman Azeh. Rebbe says, Omer Ani, theoretically, Kohanim Asurim Lishtos Yayin Li'olam. I agree with the Chachamim that, in principle, Kohanim should be enjoined from drinking wine, Li'olam, even Bizman Azeh. Avol Ma'ese Shetakanoso Kalkaloso. Now, what does this mean, Takanoso Kalkaloso? So you get the impression that Rebbe says that even if a Kohen would be able to identify his mishmar, his base av, and if he knows exactly which day of the year he would have to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Nevertheless, if the halach would require that he anticipate the possibility that the Mikdash will be restored, and every Kohen would therefore be prohibited to drink wine every day of the year, because the possibility exists that the first Kohen to present themselves in the Beis HaMikdash after its rebuilding would be required to perform the service. In other words, it doesn't matter when their Mishmar is scheduled. You know, we got to get the Avoda up and running immediately after the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, quickly on that day. And therefore, no one knows exactly, you know, when his Mishmar would, you know, would be on duty, on call, because it could change at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It's possible that all the Kohanim will be called to participate at the time of the Chanukas HaMikdash, of the dedication of the Mikdash. So therefore, logically, it makes sense that every Kohen, even today, should be restricted not to drink, consume wine, because of the possibility that there will be a rebuilding. He says, Lamaisa, we don't restrict the Kohen from consuming wine based on Shema, maybe the Mehiri Bona. And he doesn't really give us a reason, but he blames it on what's called Kalkoloso. And Kalkoloso would seem to be a reference, an allusion to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Meaning that we see in the destruction of Beis HaMikdash some sort of postponement and a delay in its rebuilding. And then the Gemara goes ahead and establishes that according to the Chachamim, there is an Iser of Shsuyayin even Bizman Hazer for Kohanim. And that's because the Avod of the Kohen would be possible if he's drunk. Whereas in the case of Prue Rosh, is Lo Machale Avoda. So Mirtz Hashem, we have just a few more lines to finish this perek, and God willing, we'll do that as an introduction to Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, which is the beginning of Perek Shlishi in Mirtz Hashem B'li Neder tomorrow.